Rump steak. Purged aubergine.
Yes.
Egg. Frittata. Ah, trick question. That's an asthmatic rattlesnake. Okay. Vinyl.
What's cooking on 95BFM?
Russell, are you there?
I am there.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm here. Right.
G'day,
now.
Mate. How's it going?
Fantastic.
Very good. Mate. Pleasure to be with you.
Oh, it's our pleasure, absolutely. As we've kind of been collecting the powers behind the Yes campaign and just trying to give them as much voice as possible, and you are definitely one of those powers, mate. You've been long at the scene, haven't you?
Yeah, I have been. The year that Chloe Swarbrick was born.
That's fucking... Okay, there you go.
I was the editor of an issue of Planet magazine that held out the hope of an end to Prohibition in 1994. So it goes back that far.
What was the scene like back then?
Really not that different than it is now, except the police tended to prosecute more people for cannabis and the courts tended to convict more people for cannabis.
Right.
Over the last 10 years, we've had a situation of what the chief science advisor's expert panel called soft decriminalisation. So,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, there are still like over 3,000 people convicted of cannabis offences every year.
Oh, yeah, it's quite a lot.
But compared to what it used to be like in the old days, there are fewer people being convicted.
So it's funny, isn't it? The full-on institutions like the police and the courts are kind of like, they've slowly just gone, oh, this is bullshit in a sense, right?
Yeah, absolutely. As a lawyer mate of mine who deals with a lot of these cases said to me, he said that the cops have basically decided that cannabis is not a driver of other crime and there are better uses of their resources. The problem with that is, of course, that when you leave things up to individual police discretion, bad things happen.
Yep.
Human error.
An
absolutely evident racial bias in who gets convicted and who doesn't, and it's young brown men.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to hear this the last couple of weeks from the people we've spoken to, in particular Ross Bell, who said that they did audience testing on that particular fact, and that didn't test well with the New Zealand public. So
that's we don't want to hear that we're racist.
Yeah, that's not what the campaign has been built around, the Vote Yes campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. And Ross said that to me as well. Yeah, it says something about New Zealanders, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, that may have been influenced to some extent, and I think the whole campaign's been influenced by the need to target this group of 15 or 20% of persuadables.
Right, right.
Who could go either way and might actually be quite conservative in other ways. Mm. And, you know, I've been quite aware of that doing our campaign, that it actually puts quite a negative slant on the campaign because you're always talking about the risk, because what the research tends to show, and it was the same in the US, I talked to the people who developed the ballot propositions in California and Washington State, and they both said the same thing. People wanted reassurance.
Right.
So that becomes your default. That's where you start from, of saying, well, okay, it won't be that bad.
Yeah. There's tax money to be earned. The public health, you know, the risks are low. Why are we criminalizing people for this?
Yeah, exactly. And I must say, I'm glad that, I don't know whether you guys saw the article by Professor Michael Baker and others in the New Zealand Medical Journal last week.
No.
Basically saying this is a once-in-a-generation opportunity to do the right thing for public health. Vote yes.
Totally. And as someone told me today, it's a chance for us to kind of have a bill that we think is actually pretty mint, whereas in like 15, 20 years' time, whoever decides to do it will probably be a government, and it'll probably just put it in, and it'll be all their own way, and it could very much be a big business sort of bill, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And which is, from my point of view on this, you know, if I was going to make any change to the bill, which I think is actually remarkably good.
No, it is.
I think the Ministry of Justice team did a really good job on it.
Mm.
I would make it even harder, and it does quite a lot in this way, not to sell and purchase cannabis, because that's pretty onerous in the bill already, but for big cannabis to develop.
Yes, I guess that is one of the great things about it, is it has sort of focused on, you know, developing small local business, which, you know, which we kind of want as Kiwis, right? If we want to be like, hey, look,
we love our little craft beers, you know. Yeah, it's a real scene. So
yeah, exactly. And the craft beer thing isn't actually as silly as it sounds, because if you can imagine what beer would be like if there were only craft brewers and there weren't two giant multinationals selling nearly all the beer.
Mm. Yeah.
Because it's the giant multinationals we want to avoid. It's what they got wrong in Canada, where they let those big medical companies, Canopy Growth and Aurora, get even bigger and hoover up a whole lot of small producers. And now it's just a shit show, frankly. Mm. They can't deliver what the market wants, and they're losing billions of dollars. You know, there are so many reasons not to have big cannabis.
Mm. Yeah, well, it's good. We've got that sort of sussed in. But also with the bill, I like to remind everyone that we can amend it as we go as well. So we
This will go through.
We can reach that bliss point, so to speak. You know.
Yeah, yeah, and it'll be interesting to see. Yeah, you know, if we do get over the line, it will be interesting to see what changes. I mean, there are things in there that, no matter what Say No to Dope tell you, aren't going to change. You're not going to see a commercial, you know, model. You're not going to see advertising allowed.
No.
You're probably not going to see the age limit change. You know, there's a whole lot of things that are locked in at the centre of the bill, but some of the detail will be, you know, potentially really interesting.
Yeah, the publicness of it is, you only really need to go to Holland. I lived in Utrecht for a little while, which is a little bit out of Amsterdam, and Amsterdam is like the most full frontal, like, you know, we are this weed place. They sort of sell themselves on that. I don't think there's going to be anywhere in New Zealand that's going to be kind of that scene, but Utrecht was just like a little hole in the wall, and that was the spot. There was no... It was very, very low-key and so, like, fucking rad. You know, you could just go to a spot, take care of your business, and then sort of leave on your bike, and it was mint.
I can remember touring with bands in the Netherlands, and
so
you go and play this little community hall, and there'd be a little weed stand.
Yeah.
And it was so non-threatening and non-terrible and actually quite nice.
And they've shown that the youth actually uses less when it's legalized as well, because it's just normalized and people can actually talk about it, which is the interesting thing about trying to get people to vote yes, because we've been sort of having almost illegal conversations trying to sway people. You know what I mean? Talking from experience.
Yeah.
And you're going, look, I'm a criminal right now, kind of trying to talk to someone about something. So it all feels very last minute, but I guess it has to come to a head at some point, isn't it? So
yeah. And I thought I'd better put my hand up and say, I am a cannabis user.
Yeah.
You know, and there's quite a few people have done that. And, you know, I do think in the course of this thing, our conversation about it has become so much more sophisticated.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah, it is. It's really good. You know, and this is a really good bill.
Yeah.
Now, Russell, this is kind of tied into a guest selection feature. If we play one of the songs you put forward, are you happy to hold the line and have a chat to us after the song?
Well, I picked the song, so I'd better stay here.
Okay.
We're going to go with your Flaming Lips.
Lovely. Oh, I love this record.
Brilliant.
Best thing they've done in years.
Right on. This is Mother, Please Don't Be Sad.
In the end, I won't see you tonight. Father, please don't be sad. When we die, when we're high, the gatekeeper hides his eyes, lets us by.
The Flaming Lips.
I feel bad. I haven't had a hoon on that new record.
It's really good. It's sort of melancholy and trippy and, yeah.
That sounded like a song about some dude that had gotten in an accident and died, and he's singing a song from, like, as an angel or something. Crap.
Yeah. It is. So some people have said it's like possibly a Black Lives Matter shout out, you know.
Right.
Someone's been beaten to death or something.
Right.
With their guns and their anger.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Now, Russell Brown from Public Address and Hard News, we're in the window of people casting their votes for the general election and the referendum on legalizing recreational cannabis.
It's turning into one of the biggest sort of voting situations in sort of modern times.
Obviously, the key thing here is if you're not enrolled, you can still enroll at vote.nz. And you can have your say.
You can't even just rock up, I think.
With your driver's license.
You just roll up.
Just to be sure.
And it is actually worth noting that if you do care about the cannabis referendum and you don't care about the rest of it, you only have to vote on that.
You can. Yeah, right. That is worth it. That's definitely. Yeah.
You can just vote on one thing, cannabis, and that's it.
We'll take your pessimistic yes vote. Give it here.
Exactly.
But if we're going to have a conversation with friends and family over the next 3 or 4 days, Russell, what are the key things that we should talk to them about when it comes to legalizing recreational cannabis for a year?
I think pointing them to what Professor Baker and the others said, there's been various news reports on it. I think that really nails it. You know, this is a chance to actually put some regulation, behind, in place of an unregulated market, and actually get better public health outcomes. I mean, it probably sounds counterintuitive to people, but that is the case. And the evidence from overseas is absolutely not that it results in a stoned nation, which is, I think, something like Mike Hosking said that once.
Yeah. There is the
evidence from pretty much all the legalized territories is a small increase in overall use almost exclusively among old people.
From 65 plus, who've just been jonesing to get some.
We're just using, just medicating, right? Yeah. That's what that is.
Yeah, whereas if you look at Canada, use by 15 to 17-year-olds has nearly halved in the 2 years since legalization.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, and you look at Colorado and Washington State, where the rate of youth cannabis use disorder is falling faster in those states than it is in the rest of America. Mm. So, I don't think it's entirely understood quite why legalization has been so effective, and there's probably a range of things. Yeah, and some of it is it's just not cool anymore. Mm. But also it provides room for education. And maybe, you know, it gives us a chance to actually build some social codes around that.
Right.
But there's no doubt that, you know, that there hasn't been, you know, at worst, youth use in the legal states has been stable. It's more likely to have fallen.
That is completely counter to what anybody would think. I remember hearing that statistic and was like, shit. And then you have to start thinking about human nature and how we actually are, you know? That's like when people are talking about how you can buy this much weed every day. It's like, fuck. No one can afford that. Second of all, who goes out and buys like 10 bottles of vodka every day? You know what I mean?
That's exactly. That was just one of the dumbest parts of the whole debate when that purchase a one-time limit became a controversy.
Mm. No one goes to the supermarket and buys one cup of milk at the supermarket.
No. And okay, you could set the purchase limit really low if you want to run a nationwide network of tinny houses.
Yeah, that's right.
What you would be doing.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of what you want to be doing. Mm. So, one thing I've been thinking a bit about recently is that, you know, the fact that a no vote is just a vote for the continuation of something that we know doesn't work, does not achieve its purpose at all.
Yeah, and if it's very selfish because it's just thinking about yourself. You're like, look, it doesn't affect me and I'm just going to carry on.
So, all it is a vote against change. It's not a vote for anything. Mm. But it's also a vote against change in the face of the fact that the market's changing.
Yeah.
You're starting to see really high THC concentrates coming into the market. And, you know, and it's all illicit. And those products do actually have a higher risk. I mean, they're not like cinnies or meth or anything, but they do pose a higher risk. Mm. And now is actually a really good time to offer a legal, lower-risk, regulated, age-restricted, potency-controlled alternative. Mm. And, by the way, you get all these other really good social policy spin-offs. You get far fewer people getting, you know, into the court system, which is a really good thing. Mm.
Mm. Save $200 million annually on incarcerating people and...
It can screw your life, man, a dumb little conviction. You know, we've heard heaps of stories of people that were just kind of mucking around when they were young and it spearheaded their life in the wrong direction just by getting thrown, you know, just by getting that mark against your name, you know, it means you can't do certain things and it's just...
Yeah, absolutely. And you know one thing that it doesn't do? Stop people using cannabis. Yeah,
exactly.
The Christchurch and Dunedin longitudinal studies had really clear results on that. Not just prohibition, but even actually getting a conviction does not reduce, you know, people's cannabis use.
Right.
It just doesn't happen. So, you know.
Yeah.
In voting no, you're arguing for something that's really had long enough.
Fuck yeah.
And has not worked at all. 80% of us at some point in our lives will use cannabis.
I think even the no side of things can understand that the current system doesn't work. So why not try something different?
Yeah, and it's interesting that if pushed, some of the no people will say, oh, well, you know, but we don't think people should get convicted either. We're, you know, we'd be in favour of decriminalisation. And if you look at the data and the evidence, decriminalisation is actually kind of, you know, it's an inferior response. Mm. Okay, you'll get fewer convictions, but you don't have the control over the market, over who sells it, over proximity to other substances. You just lose all those public health benefits if you don't do it properly.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Russell Brown, thank you very much for chatting
to us.
All
right, it's quite nice
evening.
To have a wee rant, actually.
Yeah, that's no, great. We've enjoyed your chats, you know, in the past, sort of around this issue, and we really appreciate it. So we just thought we'd have a chat to you and get your voice on here as well. So it's fantastic.
You've got a bunch of stuff up on Public Address that people can check out if they want to do some last minute reading.
Yeah, there's a big long post I did. Part of that post actually is that I keep seeing and thinking about links to homosexual law reform.
Mm. Right. Yeah. You've actually it's the long road to yes starts with you saying one day in 1985, you popped down to Queen Street and somebody was trying to get signatures for that.
Yeah. Well, signatures against it.
Well, this is the thing. It's, you know, people go, there's been no moral crisis. All of these things, people are, you know, like up in arms about it's going to be the fall of civilization. But suddenly the law changes and things actually have improved for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. If you speak to people in the legal states, they say, well, it's just like it was, except there's weed shops.
Yeah.
Basically. But, I mean, we don't have time for this now, but boy, as things emerge about, you know, SAMNZ and the no lobby, they just look scarier.
Fucking hell, is it what, man? Anything linked to Scientology is fucking run the other direction.
There's the Scientology and then there's the right wing evangelical network that appears to be connected to
it. Classic church fear.
It's not
nice. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. All right, Russell. Well, kia ora, mate. Thank you so much for the kōrero, and we'll no doubt see you around.
Kia ora, guys. Thank you.
See you, mate.
Bye.
Although we're going out on your module track, by the way. Everything is possible. That was Module as selected by Russell Brown. Everything is possible. It's got to be a nudge. Wink, wink.
Ding! That was What's Cooking on 95 BFM.